This episode is brought to you by Bumble. So you want to find someone you're compatible with, specifically someone who's ready for a serious connection, totally open to having kids in the future, is a tall, rock-climbing Libra, and loves rom-coms with vegan pizzas on Tuesdays just as much as you do. Bumble knows that you know exactly what's right for you. So whatever it is you're looking for, Bumble's features can help you find it. Date now on Bumble.
Hey friends, before we get started on the show, if you didn't know, I'm on tour this month and I want you to come see me in a city closer to you. I'm going to be in Portland on July 16th, in Seattle on July 23rd, Minneapolis July 30th, and then some dates in Nashville and Atlanta are coming up very soon. So go ahead and go to thekevingarcia.com/tour and get your tickets for the Wonder Fully Made Tour. LA was such an incredible time. I cannot wait to show and share this with all of you out there. And if you can't join us live, you can always go to patreon.com/thekevingarcia and watch it live with the rest of the Patreon gang. See you over there as well. Let's get into the show. Hey friends, you're listening to A Tiny Revolution, a podcast about ordinary people living revolutionary lives. My name is Kevin and welcome to episode 148. I cannot believe that I get to do this for what I do for work, among other things. It's truly an incredible thing and I have you to thank for that. So thanks for sticking around. It's been a little weird and irregular out here in these streets because last month we did a really amazing series with Beloved Arise, and so please go back and listen to that if you didn't. And now we're getting back to some regularly scheduled programming with this kicking off this conversation with Tara Tang, who is somebody I met over the Instagram, and we are just good internet Judies now. And we're going to be so close to each other. If you're listening to this, please come down to Seattle and hang out with us. I don't think the border's going to be open in time, though. It's one of those things. Anyways, if you didn't listen to the advertisement at the front of the show, I am on tour right now. Please go to thekevingarcia.com/tour and get your tickets now. Seating is limited and tickets for Nashville and Atlanta will be available soon. Other things, I think that's really it. I don't want to bore you with more stuff than you need. Let me tell you about my friend Tara. Tara is an embodiment coach who works at the intersections of spirituality and sexuality. She helps people find their way back to their bodies, overcome shame, dismantle the purity culture in a way that is in alignment with their values and beliefs so they can build a healthy sexual ethic and thrive in freedom and wholeness. Aside from her one-to-one coaching, Tara hosts women's circles, workshops, online classes, and retreats through Vancouver, BC on topics of theology, justice, embodiment, sexuality, and relationships. And as she'll get into this in the podcast, Tara comes to this work after witnessing her generation's struggle with the oppressive confines of the purity industry's movement of the 90s and 2000s. Bringing with it all the broken relationships, sexual dysfunction, autoimmune disorders, and sexual violence that ensued as a result of the abstinence-only teaching that left us with unhealthy obsessions with virginity and lack of sexual ethics in our relationships. She's been a TED Talk. She is the former Miss Canada, which I didn't know until like midway through the conversation. And she's just a regular old mom out here in these streets. Two young children. Being a crazy, amazing human, and I'm really excited that we get to talk to her. So please go ahead and grab yourself something to drink and enjoy this conversation with my internet good Judy, Miss Tara Tang. Hi, thanks for taking time with me. I'm so pleased to be with you.
I'm so excited. This also, is fun, turning my phone off.
Wonderful.
What?
I'm just so pleased to be like making your acquaintance and getting in touch mm-hmm. with you. Like, your work is really cool. And apparently there's congratulations in order for a book deal.
Well, okay. So it's not officially a book deal. It's like signed with an agent now sending to publishers.
Work.
So like we're working on it.
Working with an agent is still a huge step though. That's so exciting.
Thank you. It feels really exciting and big. And I don't know what. Are we allowed to swear?
You're allowed to say whatever the fuck you want.
Yeah, I have no idea what the fuck I'm doing, but it's going to be really exciting.
I don't think anybody really, I mean, that's the whole secret, is just like, we think, like, we quote unquote, we know what we're doing. But then, like, I mean, if anything, like, this past year has shown us all is you can know what you're doing and then not know what you're doing, because the world is like, lulz, you thought, and here we are anyways.
Yes. Oh, I feel like my life has just been full of those curveballs, and in such a good way.
Mm-hmm. Well, too, that's this perfect segue into the question I ask every person, which is, okay, imagine we're in, you know, Kamala Harris's vaccinated America. You know, Hot Girl Summer is happening, festival. So, like, we're at a festival hanging out. We're sharing a beer, and like somebody comes up and is like, oh my God, you look, who are you? What's your thing? How do you introduce yourself? And it's assumed they're cool and not an asshole in any way. They're super cool. Mm. How would you introduce yourself?
Okay, so who I am is, okay, if I were to put who I am into one word, it's actually my Chinese name, which is Oi Kwan. Mm. It translates as, it's Cantonese, it translates as loves groups of people, loves people groups, or loves community.
Wow.
I know, isn't that beautiful? And
God damn.
I received that name when I was 2. Mm. I grew up in this super small town. I'm actually in Canada, so like, you know, vaccinated America sounds great, but I live in Canada.
Oh my God, so literally, so basically, are you single? Will you marry me for a Canadian green card so I can get out of here? Justin right? Trudeau, if you're listening to this, like, don't come for me.
Right? Yeah, the amount of marriage proposals I fielded in the last 4 years, I swear.
Anyways, I'm so sorry. Keep going.
Yeah, so I grew up in this super small town. There's this international choir festival that happens every 2 years. Choirs from all around the world come and compete. And we were hosting the Taiwanese girls choir, and they watched the way, like, they knew that my family was biracial. My parents are mixed. My dad immigrated from Singapore in the 70s. And so they knew that I had Chinese heritage and watched me interact with everybody at 2 years old and noticed just the way that I was. And they said, like, to my parents, does she have a Chinese name? What's her Chinese name? And I didn't have one at that point. And they said, you need to name her Oi Kwan, because she loves people. She loves community. She loves people groups. So at my core, that's who I am.
Your community named you.
My community literally named me. And then my parents legally got it put into my name.
That's fucking dope, dude.
Right? Yeah, I love it. So that's who I am. The intersections that I exist in is I'm biracial, bisexual, demisexual, sapiosexual, polyamorous, Christian, mystic-ish,
is
unsure of the church.
I'm at the place of, like, I love Jesus, and like the church could burn and I'd be fine.
Yeah, you know what? I'm with there with you.
Yeah,
for sure. I grew up as a Southern Baptist. My dad is a Southern Baptist pastor. Ooh. So I'm a pastor's daughter, divorced, polyamorous, single mama. That's a former Miss Canada. Like, those are all the weird intersections.
Whoa! Former Miss Canada?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Bitch. Work. You better go in. Girl, we knew she was a queen.
Oh, you're too sweet.
Listen,
yeah,
that's...
I represented Canada in 2012 at Miss
Cool. Hall. Magical. Yeah. Oh, I sort of want to get into that, but I also, like, I want to talk about a bazillion
of... It's so fun. You should do it.
Okay, so, like, all right. So, first of all, how the hell...
I will coach you. I have been a pageant coach. You should do it. It's so fun.
Oh, my God. Can you imagine me... Oh, my God. Getting into a drag pageant? Oh, the thing about me is, like, I've only done drag one time. It was, like, my only gig I ever had. And I was planning, like, 2020 was, like, okay... Anabaptist is coming out of the woodworks. I know, isn't that
love
a fun?
Love that. That's so good.
So my friend RV throws this really cool party in Detroit. Well, he threw it for 2 years called Thaw, because in the middle of a Detroit winter, you got to like thaw it out because it's so cold.
Fair. Yeah.
And he's Filipino and genderqueer. So it was like a super fun, queer, Asian, like, fusion space of so many fun things. And he said, Kevin, do you want to come up?
Filipinos love their pageants. Mm.
Oh my God, my friend. He's like pulling me into my heritage. That's great.
I love it.
But he said, do you want to come up and do drag for the first time? And I was like, okay, I've practiced enough in the mirror, in seminary, when no one's around or watching, I can do this. And then I went and performed and had a great time. And then the world shut down. And so next, you know, 2021 in vaccinated world. So I'll come, right? I'll get you my, I will say like, I don't, people are just like, can you do my makeup? I'm like, no, I can't do your makeup. Mm. You know why? Because I know how to do my face. And also. Yeah,
there's a difference.
Yeah. And also I keep my beard and I just do like really, really sharp like contours. But like I'm contouring with like purples or blues or like a weird ass color because I want to be more fun. Anyways.
Yeah. Why not? I mean, all of this is just exploring the fullness of your humanity. Mm. Like there are no bounds. There is all like explore all of it. Mm-hmm. That's the beautiful thing about it. That's why I love it so much.
Yeah. And so you kind of like your gender sexuality expression is kind of like that same kind of boundlessness of like, I'm able to be in love with multiple persons at one time. Mm-hmm. I'm biracial. So just like there's not a neat place for me to fit.
Being a bisexual person.
Yeah. That you are queen of the liminal space.
Yes. Yes. Exactly. Exactly. And learning to, when I figured out, so I came out, there was no real coming out. I just started living my bisexual self, but that transition happened during quarantine. So I didn't get to attend Pride yet.
Oh, damn.
I look forward to that. I know. I'm going to school right now and I'm currently studying in the Institute for Somatic Sex Education. And when they heard that, I know, it's so great. There's so much we can talk about there. But when they heard that, they were so sweet. They're like, we're going to host Pride for you over Zoom. It was the sweetest, most wholesome, most endearing thing. And I totally forgot what I was talking about. But figuring all this out. Like when I figured this out, I was like, yeah, like this makes sense because I exist in the in-between. I exist in all of these intersections. There's no category that you could put me in. And thank God for that because fuck the boxes and fuck the categories.
Hello.
None of us actually truly fit in any of the boxes. So let's just explode those boxes and live in the fullness of our humanity in all of its diverse glory.
Hello. And not just the diverse glory, but just like the ever expansive glory of the creative nature of God. That's honestly like,
more. Yes.
Oh, that's how I think about gender. It's how I think about my relationships. It's how I like both platonic and romantic, like exploding the boundaries between like even like something I've been exploring a lot with my best friend. My friend John is a straight cishet white dude. Like as far as privilege goes, he checks the boxes. Fine as fuck, like, and also just like my best friend in the whole world, and like we've just gotten to a place in our relationship where like we love spending time together, we check in on each other, we like prioritize time with one another. I'm like, and so like one day we were just like hanging out outside like smoking a joint, and he was like, I'm just like, God, I need a boyfriend to go to this wedding. He's like, well, you kind of have one. I'm like, oh my God, what? And he's like, well, I'm kind of like your boyfriend, like just, like your straight boyfriend, because like the boy is straight as the day is long.
Yes.
And also just like, he does not make me feel like another. He's like when I'm looking for a man, I'm looking for somebody who treats me like him.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because, and like that to me, that relationship between me, a, you know, queer person who's pretty attracted to men type folks and him who like, it's just, it is this beautiful, erotic, close connection that's just non-sexual, or at least non-sexual in the way.
Can we normalize this, please? Come on. Like, everybody needs this. I talk about this all day long because I have two wives. I have two platonic life partners. They are my best friends. It sounds exactly like what you were talking about. Both are straight as straight can be. There is nothing romantic that happens between us. There is nothing sexual that happens between us, but they are my life partners in every sense of the word. And I'm even to the point that I'm considering giving one of them power of attorney, that if anything ever happens to me, like I trust her completely with the decisions of my, like whatever is going to happen to my body. If I cannot make those decisions for myself, because that's how deeply our intimacy runs and how well she knows me. Mm-hmm. Like you, and I think like this is one of the things that polyamory has given me.
Right.
Is when I was, it, you know, we grew up in a mononormative culture. That is the norm in which we live in. Mm-hmm. And so when I was monogamous previously, like when I was married previously, when I was monogamous in prior relationships, we prioritize this, like, this is my significant other.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And they get this pedestal above everybody else, and realizing that, especially because I'm solo polyamory. So I prioritize that relationship with myself, and
hello,
I nurture that first and foremost.
Same.
But everybody that I'm in a relationship with is my significant other. If you are in my life, you are significant.
Yes. Come on.
Yeah. And so it's completely different. And that intimacy that you can have, that depth of intimacy that I have with my platonic relationships, is just as important to me as my romantic or sexual relationships. Mm-hmm. Like, everybody is important to me, and nourishing that. And so realizing then too, that like my partners that I'm with don't have to feel this expectation or this burden to fulfill all of me, because I fulfill me.
Yes. Come on, somebody. That's a whole ass sermon right there. And that's what it comes down to. I think it's like this, when we have that kind of love without, you know, love without bounds, if you will, not love without boundaries, because I think boundaries,
different.
Yes, but love without different, like chains, or love without like, love without ownership, it really does. I think honestly, that's kind of like, you know, I always talk about the Holy Spirit is queer, and like is trying to queer the spirit of queerness, because queerness is like just, it's like how I think about myself in my life is like, I don't need to fight the parts of myself that I don't like. I don't need to push away the things that I find hard. I need to expand my love out and include that part of myself. And it's like when I become my own you know, that people used to talk about primaries and secondaries, and some people still do, but like I am my own primary. That's something my friend in, I think that's what my friend India once said, was just like, I want to be my own primary. And I'm like, that's exactly it. When you recognize that you are responsible for this experience, and you prize your peace and your pleasure above everything else, it is amazing how much more love you have to give to the world.
Yes, absolutely. Because then I'm not pouring from an empty cup, right? And for me, I don't practice hierarchical polyamory. So I use slightly shifted language. So if anything, like I don't have a primary partner, like I said, but I use the word anchor partner. So I am my own anchor partner.
I like
that. I don't have primary, secondary, and all the way down the line, because I never want somebody to feel like they're secondary. They are not secondary to me. They're not secondary.
It's just a different relationship.
Yes. And I don't get on board with hierarchies in general. Like, fuck the hierarchies. We don't need hierarchies.
It's not, listen, as Jesus, what did Jesus come to do? He said, tear the temple down, bitch. And then I will rebuild it in 3 days. But what is he talking about? The body, an organic thing, mama.
The body. Yes. Yes. And so, you know, I do the work, like I'm an embodiment coach, and that's what the book is going to be about, as well as like embodiment, justice, reclamation, all of these things, because they matter. The body matters. I was speaking with a client just this morning, and we're leaning into the truth that the body matters to God.
Yes.
Like, God could have entered the world in any capacity, and we can argue all day that like I see God in the ocean, I see God in the flowers, I see God in the air, I see God in the sunset. Like God is in every bit. But God also chose to come to the earth through the human body. Like the human body matters. God is doing something through that human body. And we've neglected it for so long, and we've treated it as like, oh, it's desperately wicked, and it's just carnal and fleshy desires. It's going to lead you away from God. But I really think that the body is the place where we meet God.
It is the map back to God.
Everything.
It's the path inward towards loving the body is the narrow path that Jesus talked about, I think. It's just like, and you know, and because especially in a world that demands of your body labor, you know, capitalism has demanded, you know, it's tricked us out of like our original design, which was in tribe and community and in people groups and in community with the land. Let me say communion with the land.
Kinship.
Yeah. And that I think is like something that I think that like a lot of us are kind of waking up to is like, oh my God, evangelical Christianity. What is, I think it was like Joe.
Oh, I think I lost you for a second.
Check one, two. There we go. Yeah, now we're back.
You're back. Your screen is frozen though.
No. Then we'll we'll pause the video and bring it back. And we're good.
There you are.
Perfect. Wonderful. Okay. I think Joe Lumen said
evangelical Christianity.
Yeah. I think something Joe Lumen said was, what is evangelical Christianity if not colonialism?
Yes.
What was it? What was that Marvel quote? Preserving. Yeah, that's the word. Like, because like, you know, it's like that like little joke that's like, yes. What is grief except for love preserving from Miss WandaVision? And then she said, what is evangelicalism if not colonialism? Preserving.
It is. It's colonized Christianity. There's nothing else to it. It is. As we know it here in a North American context in 2021, it is colonized Christianity.
All the way up to like the, even the church, well, I mean, with the, probably the exception of Black and African churches, but even still, depending on what Black Black Christian tradition you come from, the misogyny that's present, the sexism that's present, the queer and transphobia that's present.
Yes.
That is internalized racism, blackness. It's a relic of colonialism.
It is, absolutely.
Sorry, and continue what you're saying.
No, it's so good. One of the other intersections that I exist in too is, you know, so my dad, like I had mentioned, immigrated to Canada from Singapore in the 70s. My mother's family, like, they're straight up colonizers. Like, they've been celebrating like hundreds of years on the homestead. Like, they were early settlers to Canada, straight up colonizers. Damn. But my children, because their dad has indigenous heritage, my children are part indigenous. And so there's this cultural reclamation that we're trying to like bring back to them. And for me, it's interesting because I am trying to help them reclaim their culture. And it's a culture that is not my own. Because I'm not an indigenous mother, but I'm a mother to indigenous children.
Damn.
And so it's this interesting intersection to be in. And then even, you know, we talked about Miss Canada, even being the representative for Canada on an international stage, like what is that representing? It is we are a colonized nation. Canada is this is going to be bad. Canada's illegitimate in a lot of ways.
I'll say the same thing.
The United States is.
United States, you know, the any sort of like Mexican or like Spanish influence in Central and South America.
Yes.
There was somebody who I saw a tweet. It's like, what would happen if churches just ceded all of their land back to the nation?
Ooh, right?
Just transfer like real estate. Actual, yes. From like the colonized legal system.
Yeah.
What would happen?
Yeah. Yeah. I remember when I was in university, I went to a Christian liberal arts university.
Hallelujah.
Like, how entrenched can you get? But I remember a poli-sci class that I was in, we were all sitting around doing this like round table and everybody was a different province or territory at the table. We all represented somebody else and I was supposed to represent the Assembly of First Nations. And I remember sitting there and they're like, we're trying to negotiate something. And I just remember sitting there and being like, I'm supposed to represent indigenous voices at this table. There is no representation unless you actually honor the fact that all of this is unceded territory. Like this is unceded, stolen land. We can't move forward until you acknowledge that. And if you acknowledge it, it is disbanding Canada as we know it. So I don't see a way forward. And it just hung there in the air. And everyone was just like,
because that's really it, is that like that's if really we it. If we want to go back and like just it's not even really going back far, it's not just like I look at America, it's like I look at my, you know, my white family in America and it's like, and just I think evangelical Christians and people whom I've been thinking a lot about people from my past recently, and so like I think about the people who I had to leave behind in those churches, people who couldn't go with me on my journey.
Yeah, that's right.
And it's like, you guys have no idea how rich our tradition actually is. Yeah. You have no idea how deep, you know, the ideas of Christ really go. Yeah. And if you did, you would be with me. Yeah. Like if it's, and it kind of like whenever I'm, they don't understand. It really comes down to this thing of like, when someone doesn't understand this, and like, it's one of those things where like, it's a whole, it is truly a worldview shift.
Yeah.
Moving from just like looking at just the history books of like America, like we built this on slaves, on the backs of black people that were stolen.
Stolen land by stolen people.
Stolen people on stolen land.
Yeah.
And it's like, and I tell people this, I'm just like, while the burden of what racism has done to us is not quote unquote your fault, it is, if you know, when you know, it is now your responsibility. Yes. And responsibility is not a burden. Responsibility can be a joy.
Yeah.
And I think that's what I, if I could instill anything in, with anyone, I'm just like, responsibility, like to be charged with taking care of your kin, people whom God loves.
Yeah.
Like that doesn't seem like a chore to me. Like,
yeah.
So you have to give up money? Fuck it. So you have to give up your land?
Yeah.
But guess what? Again, people have said it over and over and over. We should be grateful that people that we have conquered do not want revenge.
Yeah, it's true.
Because my God.
Right? I was thinking about that even because it was International Women's Day yesterday from, I don't know when you're putting this out, but the day that we recorded. And so, you know, I've seen that also floated around too. Like, thank God we only want equality and not revenge.
Oh my God. If women rebelled, like really rebelled.
Like actually, oh fuck, they're not ready. The world's not ready. Not ready. Oh,
Jesus, break us free from patriarchy so we can see it.
And so that's, for me, that's been so much of the work that I've been doing, right? Because I still love Jesus.
Mm.
Like you, I got, you know, a pastor's kid. I got mad issues with the church. I spent so much time, like when I was Miss Canada, I was like the shiny thing, right? So I did the speaker tour. I did all of the circuit, all of the, and I hit this glass ceiling. I went as far as you could go as a woman in an evangelical and a biracial woman. Fuck, can you imagine if they knew I was bisexual too? I went as far as I could go until I hit this glass ceiling. And then that was what started my second deconstruction period that I've been going through in my life, because I went through one in my teenage years. But the place that I'm at now is like, I still find so much value in who Jesus is and the teachings of Jesus. And yet Jesus has been so weaponized by these political forces that have been co-opted by the church. And so how can we strip those things away, unlearn those things, and get to this reclamation of what is true and what is good and what is holy? Because I don't think we have to throw the baby out with the bathwater, but there's a lot that we do have to dismantle and burn down. And to that point, like, yes, like Joe says, absolutely. It's colonized Christianity and it was weaponized against people. And the part that makes it the worst is that Jesus was an indigenous man.
He was.
Jesus was a brown-skinned indigenous man. And we have
weaponized. In a colonized land.
In a colonized, oppressed land.
Occupied territory. Military occupation.
Yes. Exactly. That is the irony of it all. And we turned him into this white Jesus to oppress others.
You know what I just realized is that technically, not even technically, but truly, like America, like all the colonized nations, I'm like, it's just extended military occupation for hundreds of years. Yes. Holy shit.
Yes. Yes. I live on occupied land.
My goodness. We didn't know we were going to go here today.
Right. But and so this is the work that we do. Right. And this is that reclamation of what does it mean to be fully human when we strip away all of these structures and these machines that we were plugged into for the profit or the power or the political gain. Because when you really start to step back and you look at all these pieces, like that's what this is. How do we reclaim what it means to be fully human? How do we come back into right relationship with God, into right relationship with each other? That's the point.
That's it.
That's the point of it, all of it.
There is the very last paragraph in the Gospel of Mary Magdalene, or like the last section. She's just finished telling everybody like the things that Christ revealed to her. So basically, how do you get free in your body in this lifetime? It's a very beautiful story. And then at the end of it, Peter gets up and says, do y'all believe any of this? Like, do you really believe the Christ said, like, our Lord said this to her? Because I don't. And then Andrew gets up and says, you know, you have always railed against this woman. But if Jesus made her worthy, who are we? No, who are you to say so otherwise? We should make no other law except that which the Lord hath made. And then it says, and then they went out and began to preach the gospel. Right. Only when someone in a position of power spoke up for the person, the woman, the excluded group, only when that happened, when he ceded his position to say, no.
Yeah.
That to me, I'm just like, okay. So like, that's where also that means the church belongs and should be led by women.
Yeah, but no, women are not allowed to preach. Nuh-uh. Women are not allowed to preach and hold positions of authority and power at all. Yeah. We need to sit down and be silent and submit to our husbands, raise the babies and make the coffee. But like that's what I don't get, how so many people miss. Mm-hmm. You know, like I was reading into the other day about the Samaritan woman at the well and realizing that, like, when God is like, or Jesus is like, oh, you have five husbands, he doesn't actually ever condemn her. We add that into our reading. He's just stating a fact of her life. I'm like, oh, is she polyamorous? I don't know. We don't know. But she's the first evangelist.
Oh, my God. What? Because, like, it never really said that she was, that those husbands were dead. Just that she had five. What if, you know what, bitch? You better.
Right?
I'm just like, she's like, I'm just out here. She's like, I don't come down to the morning because all these other bitches are hating on me. But guess what?
Right.
Mama's going to, because also, like, I think about it this way. Maybe she was a woman who couldn't bear a child.
Who knows?
And so maybe for her.
We don't know. The text doesn't tell us. We just fill in the blanks. The text doesn't actually tell us.
Oh, and isn't it, it's so wild. Like, when I was in school, it's just like, especially people who had never, like, thought critically. Like, I'm sitting there, like, pulling things here and, like, querying the text or, like, reading it through this lens. It's really funny how, like, things that you and I, like, find to be interesting or, like, oh, yeah, of course that's there. Some people are just, like, they've never seen the Bible or scripture used in a way that's liberative.
Yeah. And what is the point if it's not liberating? What are we doing? What are we doing here? What are we doing if it's not liberation? Mm-hmm. As if Christ came to set us free. What are we doing if it's not liberating?
And that's the thing. I think it's like the Gospel Coalition has been like doing the whole like, you know, if you deconstruct, you have to do it a certain way. And it's really, it comes down to this, a trust issue. It's like something I saw Alicia Crosby say on Twitter was like, you know, there's a verse that says perfect love casts out all fear.
Right.
And she said, we need to recognize that some people, for some people, that was never a reality. They've never known faith without fear.
Yeah,
they've never,
true.
They've never known, or they've never known perfect love.
Yeah. And also true.
And so it's like, okay, so how do we embody that perfect love that is all encompassing and holds us and also like pulls us together back to community, back to self. It's real interesting. So let me ask you this. In your work as an embodiment coach, you're helping folks reclaim this aspect of themselves that for so long has been neglected. Tell me a little bit about what is embodiment coaching for you? What does that mean? And what do you do?
So I always tell people, I'm not your teacher.
Work.
I'm not your teacher. If you're coming here, I'm not going to give you the answers. I'm not your teacher. Your body is your teacher. Mm-hmm. Your body has everything within yourself. I'm just there to help you learn how to listen, learn how to find your way back to that. And I remind them the truth. I'm a mama, right? I've got a 6-year-old. I got a 4-year-old. I watch them fully inhabit their bodies. Mm-hmm. They don't question. They know. My daughter has even gotten to this point where she'll tell me, my body is feeling, my body is telling me this. Mm-hmm. And I watch them, you know, if it's, they know this is a yes, this is a no, that they will tell you. They will sit there and they will, there's no emotion that is too big for them.
Right.
They do not fear their emotions yet. Mm-mm. If they're feeling something in the middle of Superstore, they're feeling it. And we're taking a minute because there's nothing else you can do but let them feel their feelings in that moment, right? And not try to shut it down. And so we were all embodied once, all of us. And yet because it's undeniable, we live in these structures of patriarchy, of colonization, of white supremacy. We live in all and everything that comes down to. You know, every injustice that exists in the world starts in the body. Racism, sexism, homophobia, fatphobia, transphobia, go down the line, all of it starts in the body.
Say it.
Right? And it through these structures who have decided this is what is normal. Normal is a social construct.
Mm-hmm. It's a myth.
It's a myth. This is what we have decided is good and normal and acceptable. And everybody, we all got to squeeze ourselves into this, but we exist outside of that. Some people exist in that. Great. Awesome. But it's not expansive for humanity. Mm-mm. It's just one expression of it. And so how do we unlearn so much of the work that we do in this embodiment coaching is unlearning and stripping back those things so that we get to the point of like, who are you really in the fullness of your humanity? And how can you live in that without all of the limiting beliefs that everyone has piled up on top of you?
How can you, and I think there's, I'm a big, as a good Christian woman, the word I would use is like, how do we repent? How do we change our mind of those? Like, how do how do I repent of my own internalized transphobia?
Right.
Especially like as someone who's like, you know, a non-binary queer person, like, and like, I still have moments where like, I'm afraid to wear something that I want to wear because I'm thinking some guy, you know, boy, I have remarked this to myself that guys that I like don't like girls like me. And I'm like, that's not true.
It's not true.
I'm just like, there is some dude out there or some human out there who loves a girl like me who has a beard and lipstick and floral patterns. And and it really is like, it comes down to like, what am I willing to, I think like for myself, I have like, what am I willing to settle for in myself? Like, am I willing to settle for that shitty talk, you know?
But when we do, we get to this point of, okay, so, and I was working with this with a client as well. We don't want to make other people uncomfortable because we've taught that matters. And it comes from a good place.
Quote unquote, yeah.
Quote, but am I betraying their comfort or am I self-betraying? Because I have sacrificed myself at the expense of someone else's comfort.
Right. Because we think that love requires sacrifice.
Right. Yeah. And if we just learned to, like, and this is one of the things that I personally love about polyamory is it's taught me people don't belong to you.
Hello.
People don't belong to you. Mm-mm. There's no my man, my woman, my whatever. You just learn to accept and value and cherish, appreciate that person for who they are and the time that you get with them. Because no one's time, you're not entitled to anyone's time.
Mm-hmm. One of my kind of mantras I try to keep it when I'm in relationship. And I guess like for anyone, I just like, I want to love you as best I can for as long as I have you.
Yes, right?
And that for me feels good. Just like,
and it changes everything. It changes the entire conversation that we're having, the entire framework that the relationship exists in then, right? Because we feel like we have to accommodate one another, or we have to fit into a certain box. Or we have to, again, these dang boxes, and we have to be a certain thing. And then so we self-sabotage and we self-betray and we self-sacrifice. And then that resentment grows because within our bodies are telling us within, like, there is something wrong here. I am slowly suffocating and decaying on the inside to make this work. mm-hmm. right? And when we step outside of that, it's so much more expansive. It's so much more life-giving. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it means then we have to have those hard conversations. And we have to negotiate and find our way forward and work our way within a new framework. Sometimes, unfortunately, it means that those are people who are limiting, that are not in alignment. We have to leave them behind and bless them on their journey and send them on their way. And that's the really hard thing. But, you know, are you going to continue to self-betray? Are you going to continue to disembody yourself because we're cutting off parts of ourselves and we're rejecting it, we're putting it in a box, and we're just I'm not going to look at that box in that closet, I'm just going to leave that there? Or are we going to invite those pieces back into ourselves
and it really comes
and embody wholeness?
I ask somebody, I'm doing it this way, and I'm just like, well, how's that working for you,
right?
Because, and that's what is so kind of frustrating in some ways, and I have to like get on myself about this, is that like, in there is a part of us in some ways, like, where like what is it, I don't want to hate myself ever for any reason. And if there is guilt that comes up for me, that's something to pay attention to. I think the thing you said about like that nobody belongs to you,
I think that really
shifts everything for me.
Yeah.
Just like in every single relationship, platonic or otherwise.
Yes. Yeah.
And I think it allows us to be more rich in those things, because we're not threatened, because we know we're not going to lose love.
Yes.
And I think that's when that when one can hold that truth and actually believe it. It begins like a healing process that I think that we didn't know we needed.
Yeah.
When you are thinking, like, because I'm sure you get this question a lot, like, what are your resources on like how to find, like, what book, what are your Poly books that you send people to?
Oh, Poly books. Yeah, for sure. There's great ones that are out there. The Ethical Slut.
I don't
love the title, because I'm doing my own internal working on the word slut.
I get it when people call it.
Even though slut is a social construct as well.
Yeah, and like that for me is just like, for me, I'm just like, I don't think I'm having enough sex right now to call myself a slut. So
right,
you know, and but also
it's a great book. The content is fantastic. Great book. Polysecure is another one that I just started reading.
Me too.
That's fantastic, because it talks about your attachment styles, right?
Yes.
So that one's great. More Than Two is a very practical, it's kind of dry, but it's a very practical guidebook.
Now, granted, I listened to More Than Two. And so like
hearing
the stories to me, like really getting those like real world out. Cause like More Than Two is basically all anecdotal. Like these are how we made our way through it. And I think that's good teaching, in my opinion. Tell me how this actually works, Brenda.
Yes, it's very practical, super practical. And then just like getting into the community has been the big thing for me. There's great pockets on, like, there's some great like polyamory awareness. Manu has a great account on Instagram. There's a fantastic Discord server that is connected to that. There's a poly group in my community, so I'm part of that on Facebook. Like there's great resources that are out there, and you might even be surprised of how many people in your world are already polyamorous or ethically non-monogamous, and there's a distinction, but there's a lot of us, a lot more than, like, I'm openly polyamorous, and so I talk about it openly to anybody who wants to hear it. But there's a lot of people who are not open about it that are open.
This is something that I was just talking about with somebody else. I have a friend of mine who is a clergy person who's like, me and my partner, we opened up.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's dope, because like you're getting your needs met, et cetera, et cetera. And the more like, it's like, there's so many, first of all, so many clergy folk across the board, queer or straight, or straight, cis, trans, whoever.
Sure, yeah.
There's a lot of non-monogamous and poly clergy folk out there.
Well,
and
there's a lot of non-monogamy in the Bible, too.
Hello, listen, you want to talk about a biblical marriage?
I
can give you eight ways. I can give you eight ways to have a biblical marriage.
And biblical marriage, as they claim it to be today, does not exist in the Bible.
No, not a bit.
Neither does Christianity as it exists today.
Oh!
It does not exist in the Bible. Right?
This is why I'm glad that I'm capturing video now so that people will be able to see that reaction. Like, that's another thing. Like, Jesus was not even a Christian. He wasn't a Christian. No. And, you know, it's really interesting to be alive at this point in, I think, like, what's happening in the history of Christendom and faith communities in general. Because, like, I think, like, I mean, can I ask how old you are?
32.
I'm 31. Wow, we're just like, oh, yay. Come on. So it's like we grew up in that time frame where just like, I don't know if like when you were younger, I could have never imagined same-sex marriage being legalized. I could have never imagined me being okay with like just being out and queer.
Right.
You know, let alone like gender expansive, let alone a stoner, let alone a witchy
woman. I mean,
a
lot of these things happen in Canada before they happen in the United States. Mm. So I could imagine it sooner, but because of the community that I lived in, like for me being bisexual, that's why I figured it out when I was 31, because it was not on the table before that. I came to affirming theology first, and then I was like, right? Because, and I never questioned it because I was like, I straight men. Cool.
You're a woman, and you're a woman, and you have this... I've talked to so many humans out there who have been socialized to be, you know, when you are a woman or socialized to be a woman in the world.
One way. Mm-hmm.
And it's really the thing is like, I didn't recognize that I was queer in some ways until like my good friend, Rachel Kurtz, I think she's 42, 43. Mm. But she just realized that she was a queer person. She got 3 kids, was married for a long time, and now is dating a trans non-binary person.
Brilliant. Beautiful. Love it.
And it's like,
Yeah.
And that for me, I'm just like, can't everyone just be a little bisexual sometimes?
I think most people are.
I think they are too.
If we're being honest, but we never give ourselves the chance to explore these things or even like think about these things. And that's why I love these conversations. And I had a conversation with somebody just the other day who was questioning like, polyamory, maybe that's for me. I don't know. And I'm like, even the fact that you are having this conversation with yourself is worthwhile because a lot of people go to straightness as the default. We go to monogamy as the default and we don't question these things. And we don't even talk about like within a monogamous context, when we enter into a monogamous relationship, a lot of the time we don't even really discuss what that means. We don't discuss what are the boundaries of this relationship.
Hello.
You consider flirting cheating? I don't. Maybe you do. Like, right? Mm-hmm. And so like everybody has their different expectations, but we never vocalize them or we never even think about them.
Yes. And those, sorry, I was just going to the desires that we have and all the things that we want, it's been demonized to say, hey, your desire is bad. So like you can't want anything anyways. And then because we're humans and we have desires, what then ends up happening is there's an entire, you know, we have like the Carl Lentz's of the world happening where it's like super powerful Christian men or than any. And also like, you know, any given Sunday, you know, every single time you sneeze, I think a church has a scandal where the pastor was having an affair.
Yes.
So.
Yes. Because we've made this one way as normal.
Yes. And it's just like, I have no, like what 2 people do in a bedroom is none of my business again. But like, again, there is a difference between somebody who's non-monogamous and someone who's polyamorous and also someone who's fucking cheating.
Yes.
Because, and also
like
as some
ethical non-monogamy.
Yeah. And I say this as somebody who has been the cheater because I thought that I had to be pinned into monogamy.
Right.
I had a whole bunch of desires and things that different kinds of sex I wanted to try.
Right.
But I didn't know how to talk about it because I hadn't been equipped. I still in my own head, even as like an openly queer person, had purity culture rules for sex.
Ooh, yes.
And didn't know how to communicate to my partner, hey, I don't want to do that. Or I don't feel comfortable with this. Or just like, I don't want to have sex right now.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Like, there's so much that you don't learn. And so I had to. You know, I had to learn how to communicate the hard way through my mistakes of thinking because it was always the threat of love leaving. It was always the threat of being alone. But then when I finally, it's like when I was able to finally be real with myself and finally just say, this is what I need. This is what I want. Clarity, Like, tell, like, one of my thing, I think the thing that more than, that the ethical slut taught me was just like, what would happen if you actually asked for what you wanted? What would happen if you told people that you needed something? What would happen? Like,
From an embodiment perspective, because a lot of people don't even know how to find that.
Mm-hmm.
I'll say, what does your body need right now?
Right.
What does your body need to feel safe right now? What does your body want right now? Mm-hmm. And helping people take up the space to say, yes, this is a full body orgasmic yes for me. Mm-hmm. I want this and own that want. And sometimes that's in a sexual context and sometimes that's not in a sexual context, but own that.
Mm. Oh my God. Okay, I'm just looking at the time and I don't want to like jump into too many streams. I feel like that's a good punctuation point.
Mm. Yes.
I like you, Tara. I think you're really, really cool.
Thanks, I like you too.
You wanna be friends?
Let's be friends.
Hell yeah.
Forever. You're my friend now.
Hi. I can't. Also, when the world opens back up, I think that I'm gonna go on tour. Like, I'm gonna get in my little. My vision is I'm gonna get an RV, like a little camper van situation, and take it on the road and just like.
I did that across Canada in 2011. So many fun memories.
Oh, I want to do it. I want to go to like all the cities where my friends live and do little things, little shows and little talks.
I did that in 2011. I brought a band with me. We went to, I can't even, we did like 21 events in 20 days or something like that. It was absolutely wild.
Oh my, I'm exhausted, but also it sounds so much fun.
It was great. It was so fun.
Oh man.
Let's do it when the world opens back up again. You add some Canadian city dates.
Absolutely. Listen,
and I live 15 minutes from the border, so like you just let me know and I can hop across when that opens up again.
Listen. You know what? I'll still be your friend if you don't marry me for a green card.
Oh!
I'm gonna hit the stop. That was my conversation with the fabulous, incredible Tara Tang. And if you want to follow her across the internet, you can check out her stuff at Miss Tara Tang across social media. Her website is taratang.com. That's TARATENG.com. And since we've actually recorded this, I believe that Tara does have a book deal now and I am on tour. So I'm not saying that we're just speaking our life into fruition, but girl, it starts with a dream. Well, you know what I'm seeing? Anyways, if you want to follow me, please go to @TheKevinGarcia across social media. And if this was good for you, please, 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 please go to Apple Podcast and leave us a 5-star review. It is super helpful. And if you love content like this, you want to support the show and make more stuff like it available and get yourself involved with some really cool community, please go to patreon.com/TheKevinGarcia and join. We've got workshops coming up. You get free access, like get a digital ticket to come to Wonderfully Made in all of the cities across the United States and get the playback for the shows in the past. So really, it's a pretty good deal. You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying? So that's at patreon.com/TheKevinGarcia. And I don't really have much to say. If you want some sweet merch, if you want to say hello, please just shoot me a message. I'd love to hear from you. And that's all. So till next time, please take your meds, call your person, shake your ass a little bit, eat something delicious, look yourself in the eyes and tell yourself that you love yourself. Okay. I'll see you next week. Bye.